Welcome to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Jennifer Corning, and we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West. The stories and pictures that reflect the Billings community and this region are available for those who are interested. The Western Heritage Center has been interpreting and presenting the history of the Yellowstone Valley for over 50 years. With us today is the Western Heritage Center's Executive Director, Becky Jeter.
Welcome, Becky. The museum just reopened for the 2026 season this March, so we're eager to hear about the new exhibits, and I think you have a lot of information you brought with you. Tell us about that unusual Romanesque building that sets along the tracks on 29th and Montana.
Oh, I would love to. Thank you for having me on. It is a pleasure to come and share the history of our facility. The Parmley Billings Library Building was built in 1901. But in the 1950s, it went from being a public library building to being the Western Heritage Center. And at that time, they began their mission of sharing and interpreting the stories of the Yellowstone River Valley and the Northern High Plains. And we do that through in-house exhibits. We also have some traveling exhibits. We have programming that goes on. We also give walking tours in our area. So there are many different ways that you can explore the history of our community and our region at the Western Heritage Center.
A lot of people probably don't remember that it was the Parmley Billings Library. I did because I rode my bike down there in seventh grade, and I was a volunteer at the library checking out books.
That is our favorite thing when visitors come in and tell us, I remember coming in here as a youngster and seeing all of the books in the library as it was then. And they have great memories of how it was. Right. Only a few days ago, I was coming in and there was a man and his daughter, and he told me he was showing her all the castles in Billings. So it does lend itself. It has those turrets, towers on the side. And, you know, we have a spiral staircase inside that leads up to that area, and it's just a really neat space.
Do you remember, I don't want to put you on the spot if you don't know this, but the building after the library moved out was sort of in disarray. When did it get remodeled with that beautiful new roof, probably 25 years old, but when did the whole renovation happen to the building?
That was in 1971. And it was vacant for a while. And a group of citizens banded together and formed officially the Yellowstone Western Heritage Center Foundation. That's too long for everyone to say all of the time. But they saved, you know, the building. And it was kind of a hard sell. The railroad was also involved because they own the land. The county owns the building. The railroad still owns the land. And they had some specific needs and requests that they wanted to be fulfilled. And so they collaborated together, and you get what you see now. Speaking of the roof, that we did replace it just a few years ago.
Well, it's funny because we are in the Joseph Sample studio.
I saw that.
And I know that Joe Sample was instrumental early on in saving that building.
It really was a community effort, certainly. Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know that people understand the difference between a natural history museum and a cultural history museum. Let's start with a primer and give us that information.
Well, if you're looking for natural history, that's more of your dinosaur bones, anything you find out in nature. And we do not have a lot of those things. We do have some taxidermy type things, and we try to showcase different levels of interpretation in all of our exhibits. So when we can introduce those things, we will, if it's appropriate. But mostly what we like to tell are the stories. We have a huge collection of oral histories that people can, they're transcribed, so they can do research and find the topics they're looking for and hear the stories from the people who lived them. And that's really important for us to share their people's own words and their own stories and let them tell them, you know. So we try to make those available. We love to tell the history of our town, our county, and then the greater Yellowstone River region, and how that fit into even our national, our global story. Mm-hmm. So we're more focused on the history and not quite so much as nature, but we love it when they combine.
And this is not specifically Yellowstone County or Billings. I mean, the Western Heritage Center covers the whole swath of Western history.
Really, the whole southeastern section of Montana. But again, how it applies to a national story or, you know, regional. So it covers a lot of different areas.
Has the mission changed from when it was first established?
No, not really. Very, very slightly. Sometimes we change slight words just to make the mission clearer and more easily understandable, but the mission's always stayed the same.
A good friend of mine, Linda Moss, was the director of the Heritage Center many years ago, and I don't know exactly what the time frame was, but there was a time where embracing our Native culture became more of a priority because a lot of the Western history that was being told was all the cowboys and none of the Indians.
One-sided. Exactly. And, you know, that's still a priority for us. We were affiliated with the Smithsonian, and possibly right after Linda was there, and they had a huge project, an oral history project, and they collected a lot of stories, and we have those available, even with teaching guides for teachers in the area to use. So that resource is still there, and it was very valuable, and we love to see those relationships continue to grow. And actually, I can talk more about this in the exhibits part, but we will have an exhibit featuring Chief Plenicoux
through the summer. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. The other thing I don't think people necessarily understand is you have exhibits that you put on, but you also have archives. And if people wanted to do histories or studies, how do they go about accessing those archives?
Oh, we do have that available. A person could call us, and they would put them in touch with either Cecilia in the collections management or Lauren as our community historian. And any of the staff can help get that started. Or they can put in a request on the website. We have a link on our website that you can fill out a request form, and we get those weekly.
Well, that's great. Mm-hmm. Before we get into the exhibits that you have coming up, I'm interested in knowing, how do you make the decision about what is going to be exhibited? Is that your bailiwick, or do you work with the board, or with all the potential and possible stories to tell, how do you decide from one season to the next what the story is going to be?
We start with, you know, what we have in our collection, but we have notebook lists of ideas that we go over, you know, often. And these exhibits don't just happen. They're planned years out. So we have the next 2-3 years already planned out, and we're already working on the research for those, even as we're getting ready for our opening. So it's a constant process that we're doing. And we do take input. We take input from visitors, from our board, mostly our staff. But we also look at what events are also happening in our area or our nation that we may have a story to tell that would be a part of that. For instance, the 250 anniversary is going to be this summer. And so in our collections and through our conversations, we thought, you know, that might be a good time to honor Ben Steele and his artwork. Again, we've done it before, but, you know, he was such an influential and popular community member that we love. We love to honor him, and we love for his work to be seen by the community. So it's a little bit of both. It's kind of a lot of things, and we have no shortage of ideas. Like I said, we have notebooks, and we bring them up all the time because it's kind of a fun activity to do. It's like, oh, what can we do with this? What can we do with that?
So it really makes me feel old when I have seen the incredible Ben Steele drawings from the Japanese prisoner of war series. I also have a drawing that he did of me when I was in eighth grade, and I was a model at the fair, and he did a little sketch. They had artists. It's
that
like one
so
of my
special.
Most treasured thing.
I bet.
Oh, I'm in the same, century as all those things. What a world of difference. But
just like that story, those are the connections that we like to make. We want our visitors to come in and see something and be able to, oh, I knew that person. I had an interaction with that person. And this story relates to my life.
So the Ben Still exhibit mm-hmm. will be opening in March.
Yes.
I guess it's open. Are you open now?
We open March 17th.
So tell us about some of the other exhibits you have coming up.
Okay. One of our main featured exhibits is titled Having a Beer in Billings. And that explores the history of the Billings Brewing Company, but also in the context of Prohibition. And, settling the town, Prohibition, after Prohibition, and what that meant and how that created the landscape and the culture in that area. Because the Billings Brewing Company was our neighbor just down the street on Montana Avenue. And they struggled after Prohibition. They stayed afloat by bottling soda. But then Prohibition ended. They went back to beer. It wasn't quite as successful. Times had changed. And then they went out of business. And their fabulous building with a really big light mm-hmm. and it was gone. So we're telling their story, but also just the role that's played in cultural and social life. We've also, in addition to that exhibit, we have a car. Many people have seen the picture of the historic beer bottle car.
I was just going to ask about that car. I've only seen a picture. It actually exists?
It is going to exist again. Oh. The original car unfortunately disappeared. We were not able to locate the original car, but we have recreated a replica of that car. And the old one was on a Maytag frame, which was very hard to find. So we were able to acquire a Model T car and convert it into this beer bottle car. That is, my friends, JD Motor Forge and Obzorki, all they had to go by was the picture. And they have recreated this car. It will showcase in the St. Patrick's Day Parade on the 14th.
Clearly, beer in Billings is going to be a big show because you're also on the street where there's a lot of breweries.
We are. And they
beer
are
has
our
become
friends.
Famous again.
That's our hope. just our neighbors, we have neighbors all downtown and down the street, but also in Billings and even all along the Yellowstone River, even. So and part of our exhibit is bringing recognition to those who are carrying on that tradition of crafting beer. It's not just about a large corporation distributing a popular brand name. These are our friends and neighbors that are opening their own breweries and creating really unique beer for their community. And we want to highlight them as well.
I don't know if you know that someone bought the old Conley Salary building, sort of a kitty corner from you, and they're going to put in a whiskey distillery.
I did hear that.
Oh, you did?
I did.
And Andy Nelson, who has the Pawnbrokers, was telling me the people that bought the building went down in the basement, and they were getting rid of everything, and there were old hat steamers from Conley Salary.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, that needs to be moved right out the door and across the street to the Heritage Center.
We do work with Andy sometimes. So we have a great relationship across the street. And he did share that with us, that he had received some of those things. He has quite a collection of things, too. So we share resources as well.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So we have Ben Still and mm-hmm. we have Beer in Billings. You have quite a few exhibition spaces. There's downstairs, mm-hmm. two different galleries. So what other shows are coming up?
We do. We have another one, and it's titled Hope in Hard Times. And that features the photography of Arthur Rothstein and Marion Post Walcott, who were New Deal era photographers sent out by the Farm Securities Administration to photograph rural life and just kind of what programs were going on. And it was almost like a government propaganda mission to send them out so they could advertise how they were helping. But it turned into something much greater. And these photographs are fabulous. They are really great just snippets of what life was like. And that's also going to be there in our West Gallery. And it is made to travel. So when we take it down, that exhibit will be available to be hosted in other places.
That will be so interesting. Jennifer and I went down to Heart Mountain, and the government did the same thing. They sent photographers out to document how well these people the Japanese were being treated in internment camps, when in fact, those were staged photographs. I'm wondering, did the same thing happen? I mean, were they trying to make it look better than it really was, or were they documenting the reality of the hard times?
I think that was the goal of the administrators who were away, but not really the reality of the photographs that were taken. So that it's just something to keep in mind as you're looking at the photographs. We have about 10 display panels, but 30 prints around the walls to look at. And it's really neat to see the juxtaposition between the two photographers and the similarities also. You know, there were differences, but there were also similarities. And that's really neat to look at side by side.
And I hope you'll have Mary Murphy's book in the bookstore.
Even better, we will, but she's also coming to give a high noon presentation as well.
So Mary Murphy is Montana's great historian, and her book, Hope in Hard Times, covers that particular period. Oh, that will be
exactly.
A terrific.
And she was generous enough to let us use that title, and she will be coming to give a presentation.
So you have all the archives, the photographs, the material. How do you go about choosing, and who puts together the actual exhibit?
We have 4 staff members, so I will say we all do. Who draws the short straw? Mm-hmm. We, you know, it's really what that staff member's passion is. Some of us are lean more towards one than the other. Cecilia, our collections manager, was heavily invested into the brewery one. Lauren was more geared towards the photography one. So it's just, we have a staff meeting every 2 weeks, and we just go through these types of things. One person might do the research and gather the artifacts. We all chip in where we need to chip in. One of us might do more marketing on one. You know, so with 4 of us on staff, we all do a little bit of everything.
And how stories are told. I was talking with Mandy Smoker, who was a Montana Poet Laureate, and she had just been in Washington and saw the African-American Museum that is absolutely fabulous and how they tell the stories. And she said, unfortunately, the Native American exhibits lack the storytelling that she saw there. It didn't really incorporate, because you have a responsibility for the truth, but you also have to communicate to the audience that's there rather than just here's the hard facts. Who writes all that up? And what is the story transcribed in the way that you tell it?
Our priority is, again, to have their own words. They tell their story in their own words. So whenever we can get an oral history taken, or, you know, just simply show a photograph or have a presentation, those stories are their own and they tell their own story. That's our main priority. And I think that's where the true history does come out. It's not our story to tell. So why not let the people who have it to share do that?
Becky, I recall, I think a couple of years ago, a wonderful exhibit at the Heritage Center about the Mexican-American community and the South Side. And I think there's a lot of people in Billings had no idea the cultural richness of that culture that existed.
And that's the glory of our community, is there are so many different facets. And the Western Heritage Center allows you to come in and find out what those are. We did have a great Southside exhibit, and that also lives on in a tour format. And so every Friday in the summer, we offer scheduled tours, and we have probably 30 to choose from. And they're scheduled on Fridays, but any group can ask to reserve a tour, and we can accommodate that. And that's one of them. The Southsiders tour is one of them.
So it's actually a walking tour with a historian.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kevin used to call it hoofing it with a historian.
We do. We still call it that. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot to offer. And they're all over town. We have some that leave right from the Western Heritage Center, but we have one that's up at Swords Park, up on the rims, the south side one. We also have a Cohagen. And that was Kevin's last project, was the Cohagen house tour. Because Cohagen, did industrial spaces, but he also did homes. And so Kevin had worked up a really great presentation on those particular houses, mostly in the North Elevation area. And that has become a walking tour that people can take. Actually, that's going to be our first one that we feature in May when open the walking tours.
And so did you work with the Swords Park putting that exhibit up on the rims?
The Western Heritage Center did, yes.
That is fabulous. Mm-hmm. And again, I think people walk along the rims, but you have to follow all the way down to the east side to get to that exhibit. Mm-hmm. But it's full of wonderful information.
Absolutely. That Kevin gets all the credit for that.
Becky, are there some stories that have yet to be told? I mean, you're sort of new to this position. I'm wondering, are there things that you would like to delve into in the upcoming? Maybe you already have them on your plate. I don't know. But what are your specific interests in history?
I think maybe a lot of these stories have been told. But when new generations come up, we need to be aware that they don't know some of the stories from the past that may seem like old news to us. So we like to regenerate those and make them new and exciting. One of my favorite things I love is the railroad runs feet behind our building, and we hear it often, and it's exciting to hear it. You know, I love the story of the railroad and what it still does and continues to do, and just the transportation story in the West. It's such a vast space. So I would love to tell the railroad story. The West and Montana in particular has so many great options. You know, there's mining, a story to be told. The river. I love the river. And, you know, the river had all kinds of watercraft. I would love to see the evolution of the boating on the river from dugout canoes now to rafting is what we see most of. You know, work to recreation. So I love the river. I love the railroad. The typical old West things.
I've presented a lot of lectures over the years at the Heritage Center, and it's always fun to have to pause a few minutes to have the train go by.
Right.
The building shakes a little bit, and you just know you're still in the West.
Yep, you know it when it goes by.
One of the things I think you must be careful about is everybody has their grandfathers and their great-grandfathers' stuff. How do you make the decision about what to take and what is important? And I'm not encouraging our listeners to drop off their cardboard boxes full of old clothes and shoes, but what is the criteria?
It is hard. It's a hard decision every time. And we laugh because there's a fine line between being a hoarder and a museum professional, because we want to keep it all, you know, but we just can't. And that we have a collections policy in place so that we don't have to make that decision based on our emotions every time. But, you know, we really have to focus, because we're limited in space and time, on how well objects represent the history of our region. And that does make it pretty easy, because people will bring things that aren't from here. And they may be old and significant, but if they don't tell our story, we are not the appropriate place. And we love to help people find the appropriate place for them. So we don't just, you know, kick them out the door or throw the stuff in the garbage. We really do try to find appropriate places. I guess there are other museums, there are other regions that would love to have those historical artifacts. So we really try to match the right people and the right places together.
Becky, Jennifer and I went down to the Bradford Britain Museum, which is just spectacular in Bighorn. Have you been there?
I have not. I have so many field trips to take. It's exciting but daunting at the same time. But I haven't been to that one. So tell me about it.
Well, they have the original home, which was a big ranch there, but they've built this amazing, beautiful museum. And one of the questions came up, and I think this is really interesting. They have one of the most beautiful collection of Native American artifacts. And I said, what's appropriate about having this stuff? And it was gifted to them from people that had collected it. And they said it was really interesting. They talked to both Crow and Cheyenne elders and brought people in. And the consensus was, we don't have a place to show this. And you have this beautiful museum. It's all well set up to preserve these artifacts and to show them. They're still a part of the tribe, but it's a way of sharing the stories that the tribes didn't have the capacity to do. Do you also have quite a few Native American artifacts in your collection?
We do. We do have some. We have beadwork, and we mostly have the oral histories and the photographs and the documents, but we do have some artifacts. And, you know, the important part is that it does get saved and it does get preserved. And hopefully over time, if it's not in the appropriate place, it gets back. It gets back to the rightful place. And as long as, you know, we hold those things as valuable and caretake them for the future, we can work out, you know, those details later. I think that that's the important part, is to keep it and to save it and then get it in the right place.
Becky, I didn't even ask you where you came from or what you're doing.
And did I get here?
We're going to save that for a later story.
Okay.
I'm glad that you're there. This community loved Kevin so much. And you have some big shoes to fill.
I do. It is a great place to be. I knew Kevin as well on the Historic Preservation Board. And, you know, his sudden, devastating passing was completely unexpected. And I hope, and we all continue to hope, that we do all of his work justice, that everything that he did, we carry on. We love to carry on a lot of his traditions, like the hoofing it with a historian. We're going to keep doing that. I want to preserve his space that he had in the tower. You know, we had a fundraiser in January in Kevin's honor, 30 for 30 for the 30 years of his service. And the reception to that was so generous. He knew so many people, and not just knew them, but had relationships with them, had friendships with them. I never had a conversation with Kevin that I didn't come away with more information and in a better mood. And he never made me feel like I was taking his time. That's what he did. And I'm not going to fill his shoes, though that's can't be done. But I just hope to carry on and continue what he started.
Becky, thank you so much for joining us at Yellowstone Public Radio. The Western Heritage Center, when this airs, is open now. There's a lot of exhibits. We'll have more information on our website, YP Radio.
Okay.
Becky, congratulations.
Thank you all so much for having me. I enjoyed it so much.
You've been listening to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains, produced by Corby Skinner, Jennifer Corning, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Nauman. Hear this program anytime online at ypradio.org.